Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The number one New York Times bestselling author, Lisa Gardner, is known for intricately plotted psychological thrillers and unforgettable characters, including Detective D.D. Warren and missing persons specialist Frankie Elkin. Now Lisa returns with You'll Be Sorry, a new thriller that once again explores the secrets people keep and the dangerous consequences when those secrets surface. Gardner has written more than 20 novels, earned an international following, and seen her work published around the world and adapted for the screen. It is a great pleasure to welcome Lisa Gardner to the Roundtable this morning. Lisa, thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you aboard.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Joe.
Well, thank you very much. It's wonderful to have you. Give me a sense of what brought you to this novel, this particular novel, because it is a standalone and separate from the other pursuits.
Yes. You know, I think the best suspense is grounded in, like, universal truths. And there's two of them that inspired You'll Be Sorry. And one is, you know, small town, quaint, picturesque communities. We want to believe nothing bad ever happens there. They're too pretty. But of course, things do. And in small towns where everyone knows each other and no one locks their door because the neighborhood feels so safe, well, we also know we have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. And that sets the stage for Sherford, New Hampshire, which is this beautiful little idyllic mountain town where nothing bad ever happens except, oh yeah, that family of six that kind of disappeared in the middle of the night 30 years ago, leaving behind nothing but bloody footprints. And yeah, we still don't know what happened there. And oh, we totally, completely trust each other, except of course, someone among us must probably know what happened to the Dixon family of six 30 years ago. But other than that, this is a great place to live.
What is it about events like that that just shatter the quiet of a small town or even just a region, an area, and then over time, quietly, it all starts to simmer down and ultimately become forgotten?
No, it was actually part of the challenge for writing You'll Be Sorry. I think one of the basic tenets of suspense is that everyone has to have done their best work. So if I'm saying in the small little mountain area, I disappeared a family of six in 1998, well, how? It can't be that people didn't look. I mean, if there's bloody footprints, there's evidence to be processed. Even back in 1998, there's video cameras in certain places, not a lot up in the mountains, but some. So it has to be, yeah, this was a wealthy family. They lived in the crown jewel of the mountains, you know, the local police, the state police, the FBI. And then in this day and age, you also have to account for how many amateur sleuths, true crime enthusiasts, Ghostbusters also got involved in trying to find this town, this family. But none of it worked. And that made for a really exciting puzzle that I set out to write, because at a certain point, I'm like, oh my goodness, what did happen to the Dixon family six?
Do they all begin for you as puzzles?
They do. I'm attracted to puzzles. That's what I think I really love about suspense. And I think as a reading experience, it's not just, it's the thrill of not knowing what's going to happen next. This book is on the spooky side. The people refer to it as a summerween, like Halloween in summer. I mean, this house has become decrepit. It's kind of like the local haunted house till this new mysterious couple suddenly appear and buy it. But I don't know the answer to the puzzle, and that's what keeps me writing. And I think it's what we're looking for in suspense. You know, people who read suspense, we like to solve puzzles.
Absolutely. Why do you think what it is, and not just about puzzle solving, not just about, but books like this that are spooky, books like this that are thrillers, crime, what is it about that fascinates us, that makes this such a large sector of the marketplace?
Well, I think it's a vicarious thrill. these books are consuming. I mean, they're dramatic. There's cliffhangers. There's melodrama. So in a day and age right now that can feel so heavy right now, the world life, the opportunity to sit down at the end of the day and crack open this novel and just be transported. You're in a small mountain town with lots of secrets and quirky neighbors and this overwhelmed young police chief trying to prove herself and a mysterious, very sexy couple and an even more mysterious stray dog that knows things no dogs should know. I mean, it's just nice. You can take a break from your everyday world. But at the same time, I think suspense also offers a sense of order to the chaos. These are people determined to get to the truth, are, you know, young Ernest, a police chief, she is going to get to the bottom of what happens. And I think now more than ever, we want to feel like there's someone out there that, you know, can provide order to the chaos.
All right. Let's talk characters. Tell us about Raquel and Theo Collins.
So Raquel and Theo Collins are the mysterious young couple. And interesting enough, they came to me first. I just had this image of this couple so madly in lust with one another. And those early throes of a relationship that's so euphoric, you don't ask a lot of questions, right? Because it's just so good. Except then the real world happened. They've had suffered a terrible tragedy. And now they're so aware of the things they don't know about each other. And there's this real sense of vulnerability. And they're very fragile. But I didn't even know why. I mean, I had to write the book to find out what had happened to this poor couple and could they make it to the other side?
Enter Amanda Grady, who is the police chief. She is following in her father's footsteps.
Yes.
And that says a lot about her and the mindset she has as she takes on this very important job.
Yes. Definitely one of the themes for You'll Be Sorry is it's about a community that's haunted. And for Mandy, that's almost very personal to her. She was 5 when the Dixon family disappeared. And the 4 kids were kind of all around her in ages, so she could identify with them. And she says in her own words, you know, she might have been an only child. But from that day forward, she might as well have been raised with the ghosts of 4 siblings because her father, as a police chief, couldn't let this thing go. I mean, their house, his study, was plastered with photos of the smiling children, the stray dog they'd adopted, their mansion up in the mountains. He worked this case literally to the grave. And now it's all on Mandy. And she's both trying to be her own person, but very aware she's following in her father's footsteps. And then this crazy, glamorous Boston couple show up and buy a crime scene. And I mean, honestly, who buys a crime scene? Of course, she's deeply suspicious.
but initially, she thinks, oh, this is going to be a fresh start for this place.
Well, as a police chief, and I interviewed with my own police chief in a small town, we all know so many communities, you have that house,
right?
You know, kind of the dilapidated house. And that's, you know, the place the kids double dog dare each other on Halloween to cross the threshold. And it's where the drinking and pizza parties and all sorts of stuff. So sadly, by the time it's 30 years later on Mandy's watch, the old Dixon property is where all the local teens go to get in a lot of trouble. So, you know, something happening with the property will certainly make her and her officer's life easier. But then she meets the couple and she's like, they're so outsiders. I mean, they're so Boston. They're beautiful. They're rich. According to the gossips, they had this glamorous life. And it's like, okay, who gives all that up to move here? You know, the town Mandy's always been trying to get out of.
Right.
And who gives up, like, you know, a Boston brownstone to buy this wreck of a building? So, you know, she's a good cop. She's like, something about this does not compute.
and there's a natural, there's just that natural skepticism of locals
outsiders
versus outsiders, right? I
yes.
mean, that
we
just
call them flatlanders in the
yeah,
mountains.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Flatlanders.
Well, it's just pervasive through rural areas. And I mean, I live in a very rural place. And Yeah, it's you can live there for 50 years, but what is the old saying? If you don't have three generations in the graveyard, then you're still a newcomer.
And that is so true to New England mountain towns. And that was one of the things I loved about writing this book, was kind of exploring that, you know, what community means, how deep it runs. I mean, the secrets in Sherford, New Hampshire, you can trace back to the 17th century, and it becomes pretty clear early on in the novel, the secrets do.
Right.
The past and the present, it's all woven into the current DNA of any community.
You mentioned that this book is spooky, and certainly you look at the title and you look at the cover of the book and you get that impression. The thing I love, and how I initially became attracted to your work is your work is filled with wit, great humor, and you seem to have mastered that. I'm curious as to, is that just you, or is that something that you have worked on to inject into these stories?
No, I think it's human nature, particularly if you interview with a lot of law enforcement and stuff. There's a lot of dark humor. It's how you cope. And I don't know, my family, I guess we feel like many families, we have cornered the market on sarcasm and dry wit when dealing with each other. But it's really just a coping strategy. I think it's important in suspense, though. It's going to have a lot of deep, dark secrets and discoveries of skeletons and, you know, have someone who's haunted by the images of four smiling school children. You can't have it be so dark. There has to be those moments of levity. I think some of the townspeople quickly become quite charming in their eccentricities. And I love that kind of one of our guides in this new world order is a stray dog who bears a startling resemblance to the Dixon's family pet from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But, of course, can't be the same dog, and yet seems to know everything about this property. I mean, that even the dogs in Sherford, New Hampshire have secrets just amused me to no end.
Did you like writing about dogs? A dog?
Oh, very much. I love
cool
dogs.
Dog.
And
yeah,
I have three dogs, so they were very supportive of this. Like, the dog should win. The dog is the main character. The book is about the dog. I received a lot of input.
But readers feel that way, too, right? I mean, readers react to that. I mean, I know I do. I just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a wonderful... Paul Yoon has a new book out, Aetna, which is just fantastic about a dog. And I love reading this, so I love this character. But you think of that too. I mean, that has a lot to do with character, overall character development of how this dog fits into this complex story.
Yes. The dog is both our guide, but he's the soul of the novel too. Pets are non-judgmental. They're seeking out the best in all of us. So to a certain extent, he's encouraging each character to both talk about what's really going on, but be their better version of themselves. Isn't that saying? Be the person your dog thinks you are.
Right. Oh, goodness, yes. Well, the new novel is You'll Be Sorry. It's a new thriller just out, and Lisa Gardner is the author. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. It was great that we could connect.
I look forward to the next time around. Thank you very much. Be well.
This time next year.
All right.
Thank you. Have
Excellent.
A great day.
Thank you. Again, the name of Lisa Gardner's latest is You'll Be Sorry.